This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Indigo Cox has read many excellent academic books on women's reproductive health, but as a physician herself and one who performs abortions, she wanted a book that told a story and told it from both sides. Native Girl Rights is her first novel. It follows Mari, who is training to provide abortions, and Amy, who finds herself involved in an extremist group intent on ending them. The book shows that the men and women embroiled in the debate over abortion are human beings with stories to share, and that talking about the issue is always better than resorting to violence. Indigo Cox is here to talk about her book. Welcome.
Thank
good to have you.
You
here.
Thank you. It's really good to be here.
And
it's a pleasure.
It's great to have you. We should point out Indigo Cox is your pen name.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Tell us about your character, Mari.
So Mari is of mixed race heritage. She is Native American. She is Jewish and African American. And she garners her strength and her knowledge from all of those heritages that she has. And she's particularly close to her grandmother, who is a Native American healer, and she mentors her in the medicinal healing ways of her tribe, and also teaches her about the goddess Mother Moonshun, who is a spiritual deity whose domain it is to protect women in their time of fertility, when they're very vulnerable at this time. So
Mari, I've described two characters. Mari is the one training to provide abortions, right? She's
yes.
in training. What is it that, how did those various cultural qualities come to you? Did they come to you all at once for Mari, or did you assemble them one at a time?
Oh, yeah. So they're the people that I know and see and love and treat. So it came to me quite naturally. So, yeah.
And we also described Amy in the book as well. Tell us more about Amy.
So Amy, I love Amy too. She is a young woman coming of age also in this conservative military town, and she has a pretty tough background. She is in foster care. She has a child out of wedlock who's also a mixed child, and she is pretty much disowned by her father, who is very racist and tells her very blatantly that he doesn't want anything to do with her now that she's pregnant with a child who's part black in the South. And so she leaves town with her romantic interest to make a new life for her and her daughter. And she ends up here in this town and finds this religious group who have a lot of really positive, great things for her, but also get her involved in this pathway to violence to end abortion clinic.
And you show in this book that she comes by her understanding and even her attraction to this group, quite honestly, the need to find some way to belong and some meaning, something that would give meaning to her life, is quite understandable. And in fact, the more we get to know her, we appreciate that's what she's done, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I definitely try to understand, and I do understand in a lot of ways, the passion people have for the position that they have in this issue. And I'm trying to convey that here, that there's a lot of understanding, I think, on the part of people who are also considered to be pro-choice. I think that the voice of the unborn, the religious and spirituality that people really love is important to people who are pro-choice as well.
Well, you do that with Mari, and again, you probe some of the more spiritual aspects of her character, but therefore the debate itself, and that the nurturing of life and care for life is not lost on a character like Mari, who is going to now perform abortions because it's in the service of women. So you show in all of its depth and complexity what we're facing in this debate.
Oh, thank you. You said that so well. Yes.
Well, I was going to let me get you to read, because you say okay. It well as well. And perhaps if we get you to read, we'll get a deeper understanding of what you've done here with your book.
So I will start then with Mari and her grandmother, Exine. This is a chapter where we see them together, and she is being mentored by her grandmother, who is telling her about the goddess Mother Moonshun and her medicinal powers. Exine opened up the packet labeled Silphium to show her the contents. Thousands of small, narrow seeds, brown and fragile with age, crowded the bottom. They resembled fennel, but not quite. Mari knew most of the herbs in her grandmother's box, but she had never seen this one. "This plant is thought to no longer be on this earth, Mari," her grandmother said. "Only a few lone stalks are left, growing in some secret meadow, protected by one of the few and ever-decreasing medicine women in our tribe. It was introduced when the slaves arrived and intermingled with us. Your great-great-grandfather introduced this magical plant to the tribe. It was used by the ancients to prevent birth at wartime, an illness, and when social atrocities occurred to the women in our tribe. And many atrocities were committed against the women of the tribe in the name of love and war." Exene put both her hands over her heart and then cradled her womb. "Women have always had the gift of life, Mari. But sometimes this gift is a terrible burden," she continued. "Your mother knew of this burden." She shook her head sadly. "Take only a few. Make a tea. Drink it, then pray with passion. If Mother Moonshine honors your plea, no more life will be supported in your womb."
Indigo Cox reading from her novel, Native Girl Rights. Tell us why you wrote this book.
Oh, wow. There's a lot of reasons, but I think primarily why I really wanted to give a voice to people who really haven't been included in this conversation so much. And that's women of color and people who actually do this work. So the conversation about who we are and our image, all of that's been very much dominated by the religious extremists, I think. And, you know, they haven't done such a great job, I think, portraying us. And I was really tired of the lies and the myths and the demonizing of groups that they don't really try to even understand. And I said, you know, I have a voice and I'm tired. I'm tired of hearing this and I want to put it out there.
Well, tell us more about that demonizing us. That is women who or those who perform abortions or who understand and see this as part of the a legal framework in the United States that should be continued. This demonization, you say, comes from the right, but you create extremist and extreme religious groups. You create in Amy a woman who is part of, becomes a member of an extremist group, and yet very sympathetic. Where is the sympathy there for you? Because, again, what you wanted to do was create a more nuanced voice, but you put her in a situation that was more extreme.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people recognize that, and I do too, that it's not difficult, actually, to get entangled in a very extreme view sometimes, especially when you're young and naive and you're searching for a place to belong. And I think people see that. I definitely see that. It's a very attractive stance, and it's seemingly a very loving stance. And in many ways it is, but it's not compassionate to people who really do need choice, who really do need this option.
You also said that another voice that's left out of this debate is the voice of women of color. How so? How is it different? What is it we're not hearing?
Oh, yeah. So I think, you know, in part it's because we haven't been included, but I think we also exclude ourselves from this debate. Women of color tend to be very religious, and I think that's served us well in many ways. But in this area, it's really kind of stifled our voice, stifled our ability to be able to really talk about this issue, which is critical to us. I mean, we are dying because of lack of access and in childbirth and all of these reproductive areas. And we really need to have access to reproductive justice when we give birth and when we choose not to give birth. It's so critical for us.
Will you read again for us from your novel?
Sure. So this is from Dr. Gray, and he is Mari's father. He's an older Jewish man, and he's a doctor who's been an abortionist in this town for a long time, and he's reflecting on his motivations and how difficult it's been for him. Even though abortions had been legal a few years before his wife's death, only a few clinics actually existed to meet the high demand, so some sham setups were still in existence. especially in smaller, more rural towns, where providers were few and far between. Dr. Gray wanted to do something about the constant and steady stream of women who came in night after night, bleeding from abortions done in private homes or by people who were not even trained to do medical procedures. If he could prevent another Melina, it would be worth it. But unfortunately, the harassment and stigma was constant, real, and many good people left the practice from the public shaming they had to endure for routine complications. And a few left under more tragic circumstances. Michael couldn't get out of bed the day he heard his friend and colleague, Dr. Gunn, was fatally shot in the back while walking to his Florida clinic. Dr. Gunn was one of the first doctors who was murdered because of what he did, but he certainly was not the last. The next death soon followed, and the bombings and near misses seemed to occur regularly for years. Pulling providers into hiding was at an all-time high in the 90s. Dr. Gray often referred to it as the decade of death. Bomb threats, stalking, harassment, arson, they were all commonplace in his world.
Indigo Cox, reading from her novel, Native Girl Rights. The one of the points you make, and I think it's clear in that passage, is that the fact is abortion has been legal for decades, and we forget what it was like before they were made legal and what it was like for women when they were illegal and what they had to go through.
Yes, this is, you said it again so well. Yeah, this is the main point of this book, to bring in the history. A lot of young women, and even myself, I didn't live through that difficult of a time, but my mentors did. And the things that they describe to me that they see, the deaths that happen, and the needless morbidity because this wasn't legal, it's terrible. And I hope we don't forget that. I don't want us to forget that because we don't want to go there again. We really don't want to be there.
One of the things that you do in this book, again, getting back to the spirituality, is look at the various ways in which religion / spirituality approaches this issue. And on the one hand, for the religious right, it has, in some cases, led to violence that has been sanctioned by Christian religions. On the other hand, you create a religion, the Munshan, worship of Munshan, which is another spiritual tradition. Why do you think religion is such a sort of powerful player in this debate?
Oh, yeah. So then again, this is a couple of things. This is for women, a voice of women of color. I think for women of color, again, religion, their spirituality, so important to them. And I put a plea out. It's kind of a plea to religious leaders to say, hey, you know, women of color, we need a spiritual framework for our reproductive rights, for things that really matter to us. And this is one of them. And I'm just trying, I made this up, of course, but it's not uncommon that women of color have done this, have made a woman-centric spirituality to specifically address their needs. And this is what I'm doing. It's a call out to say, we need this. It's important. We love our religion, our spirituality, and we need choice.
Was it difficult for you to write this book?
I needed to write it. It was very cathartic for me because there was a lot of things I wanted to say, and I got to say it in this book, which I'm very glad about. But it was also really emotional, and it made me cry a lot, and I thought that was good, and I cry easily.
When would you cry?
Oh, yeah, of course. All of the things that Dr. Gray goes through, you know, I feel that. I feel his pain, his difficulty. I know the harassment that he speaks of, not as much as he did, but, you know, I feel that, and it makes me really sad. And making the decision about abortion, I mean, a lot of us have been through this, and that's a really tough thing. Even if you believe in choice and you know this is something you need to do, it's painful.
You created a sympathetic character in Amy, someone who opposes what you do for a living.
Yeah.
What was that like, creating her? Was that difficult for you?
I was really scared because I thought, how am I going to do this? But when I got into her, I was like, yeah, I really see this. I really do. I see how someone is attracted to this thought. I really do. So I'm glad she's in there. And in fact, she's one of the most interesting people in the book to me.
So the takeaway for this is before we engage in a debate on abortion, I think we should all write a novel. Become sympathetic to all sides. And then we can engage in this very difficult debate, which you have taken on in your book, Indigo Cox, the author of Native Girl Rights. Thank you so much for being on our program.
Thank you. Thank you.
You can find out more about Indigo Cox and her book, Native Girl Rights, at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton Ormond, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.